I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are talking about inflation now with Mark Hamrick, Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst. 41% of Americans say inflation is their biggest economic issue. How you doing, Mark?
Doing well. Good to be with you, Tommy. Hope you are also.
I am fantastic. Mark, let me ask you this. You know, so many times we see elections and people thinking that the Democrats are going to help them or the Republicans are going to help them, and they blame this one or they blame that one. But you know what? When it comes to financial responsibility, how dependent are the people on what happens? I don't know if there's ever been a study of this on what the government does, what the stock market's doing, or people's own personal behavior. Because I don't care who's in power or what Congress we have or where the balance of power stands. If I'm spending more than I take in, I'm going to have a problem, right?
There's a lot packed in that, let me
take
try
your
to
time,
go
Mark. Take
step.
Your time. You got a half an hour. Go slow.
We'll be here all week, everybody. We'll have a brunch buffet coming up,
and then Mark will be at Haha's. So, by the way, I wanted to mention his appearance. Haha's in Virginia on Tuesday, and then next Thursday, I think you'll be at Chuckles Laugh Academy. Right
there, you go. Right. Yes, and then the pet hotel after that.
Exactly.
But at any rate, obviously a bank rate, our bread and butter is dialing into how Americans are doing with their personal finances. And there is no question, I think, that the biggest event that's occurred within the economy over the past several years has been inflation, which has led to elevated prices. Inflation as a recent dynamic has essentially receded, but we're still left with the legacy of that in many instances where a good number of prices remain high. So, yes, 41% of Americans say inflation is their top economic issue for the presidential election. And then I would note that the other two issues that come after that are also about affordability. Number two is health care costs, and thirdly is affordable housing. And I think perhaps underpinned by your question is essentially the thought, how much does or how much can a president do about any of that? And first of all, on inflation, a president can certainly make inflation worse. And I think there are proposals out there on both sides of the aisle right now, which could or would indeed do that, tariffs being one, sort of providing significant incentives to buy housing when housing is in short supply could be another. But if there were a lever in the Oval Office to turn inflation off, that would have already happened. Joe Biden would have pulled the switch. President Ford would have pulled the switch when he was deciding one of the best things to do to fight inflation was print up buttons that said "Whip inflation now," and that didn't work too well either.
May or may not be old enough to remember that, Mark. But if I was old enough, it would be pretty silly, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, I actually possess one of those buttons and carry it around with me.
For those that were not alive, let me just interrupt for a second. It was an interesting period because after that you had Jimmy Carter putting on a sweater, sitting in front of a fireplace, saying that the nation is in a general malaise, right? So if you think, y'all, if you think it's bad now, you have no earthly idea. Accurate?
Well, that's right. Yeah, no, for sure. And I would also say in all these cases we're talking about, the principal sources of inflation came from around the world. In the Carter case, it was OPEC. There were lines at gasoline stations for a long time, and gasoline was expensive. In this case, it was largely because of the pandemic supply shocks that both people wanted all kinds of things, many of which they couldn't get, and then the supply chains weren't producing many of those things. So all those things have largely since been resolved. So I do think there's an irony that if people are trying to think about their priorities in the election, maybe there's no question that their experience with elevated prices is significant. But the question whether a president can pull a lever to make a difference there, at least to improve it, I think is highly questionable.
I represent a car dealership. Troy Duhon, he's got a family of dealerships, premier automotive dealerships. So I'm not against the car business. But I think there are a lot of people, just from you look at the luxury vehicles on the road, that might be driving, you know, $90,000 pickup trucks, $120,000 SUVs yeah. that complain about inflation. And that, to me, rings a little hollow. Am I off base here or not?
I don't think at all. You know, one of the things I found the table on with respect to trying to counsel people to achieve their financial goals is, in America, consumerism is the thing. And that's been part of the great recipe for success for our economy, along with free capital markets, capitalism, innovation, hard work, by the way, immigration that have brought so many wonderful people to this country over the centuries. But to your point, many people also want to sort of push the envelope with respect to what we can afford. And I would just simply note, and you know this, that more and more people are taking out very long terms on car loans when we have elevated interest rates on car financing to begin with.
10 years on a car. That's 15 years of mortgage.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. I would never do that myself. And the other part is, whether it's owning a home or owning a car, and those are, by the way, things that have been singled out in our bank rate surveys as being associated with part of the American dream, along with being able to retire from work. You know, many people sort of get to that destination of one of those purchases and then realize, oh my gosh, what have I done? That this experience has a total cost of ownership that I didn't anticipate, whether it's paying for insurance, paying for maintenance, paying for repair. So, hey, folks, listen up. We want to help you. It's about having a budget and not sort of getting out over our skis on affordability. And by the way, to bring it back around, here in Washington, where I work and live and have for many years, it's hard finding a spokesperson for fiscal responsibility these days, right? In other words, you know, it's between the estimates of the Harris proposals costing $3 trillion and the Trump proposals costing somewhere between 7 and 10, don't dare ask how are you going to pay for those things, because essentially you're either going to get crickets or nonsense as the answer.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. I'm just curious. Do you ride the Metro or not, or do you drive?
I have. I have the benefit post-pandemic of toiling in my home. So for the most part, I'm very privileged in that regard.
Having been to Washington,
Metro is a treasure.
Sure. Having been to Washington several times, I'd never drive, man. If I was able to, if they had dependable mass transit, I'd take it here. I'll tell you that. 7:21 traffic now. WWL.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
7:26 and a half. Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Mark Hamrick, Bankrate senior economic analyst, about voters and the economy. What did you say earlier about 3 to 7? Did you say trillion or billion?
Trillion.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
And whose plan would cost what?
It's been estimated the proposals from Vice President Harris would cost as much as $3 trillion, and that the proposals put out there by Trump, which admittedly are wide-ranging, to say the least, are somewhere costing between 7 and 10 trillion.
Do you remember, Mark, a presidential race? Because I was trying to think of this, where so much was being offered on a daily basis, so many different things on a daily basis, as far as economic policies go in the last month before an election? Because I can't, or am I just not remembering things properly? It seems like every day there's another giveaway for somebody else.
Well, I would say this is an unprecedented election cycle in most ways, and I think what you're mentioning there certainly feels that way, and that really gets to what I was saying before the break, is it's one thing to talk about essentially wanting to use the federal government to achieve certain means to provide a benefit for affordability of a home purchase, or to take away income taxes charged on tips, some of the things that have been out there. But it's another to say how you're going to pay for them. And it's very much the same as an individual who has a credit card, essentially continuing to put things on the credit card with not even giving much consideration to how much the monthly interest is going to cost. And that's where we are at the present with the federal government, where the costs of interest for the federal government are exceeding the expenditures of the Pentagon. And you know, this is not part of our daily conversation. It's not part of the conversation in the political campaign. And by the way, next month, we're going to have a survey that deals on another hot topic that's not getting any serious discussion, and that is, what are we going to do about the pending funding shortfall for Social Security when so many Americans are dependent on that? That has not seen the light of day in this campaign.
Has there ever been any research, Mark, or any way to determine how much people buying what they want instead of what they need fuels inflation, overbuying, if you will?
There's so many academics out there, I could say there probably has been, but it doesn't come to mind in terms of any verifiable or confident number that I could share with you.
I just wonder if there is not a lot of this is not a self-inflicted wound, perhaps, where we see stuff on TV that we want, that we don't really need, but we want it, you know, sometimes it'll be a pretty girl. It's like, man, I wish I could date her. Well, guess what? She's out of your league. You never could, never will, so... It's nice to see. Same thing with a vehicle or a house or whatever. Thank you, Mark Hamrick. I appreciate your time as always.
Good to be with you, Tommy. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Mark Hamrick, Bankrate Senior Economic Analyst. That national debt is looming, and you're talking about $3 trillion in one hand, $7 trillion on the other. That's not going to cut it. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk about teens and nicotine use on WWL. 7:44, 16 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. A delightful fall morning in the area. The average of temperatures are about 53 degrees. Not going to get to 70 until about 2 o'clock this afternoon, so get out and enjoy it while you can. Shelby McRae joins us now, specialist in pulmonary and critical care medicine at LSU Health New Orleans. I presume that's Shelby McRae, MD.
Yes, and a physician.
I know. I'm just kidding. How you doing, Doc?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay. Let's talk about teens and smoking and vaping and nicotine. The first thing I guess we should do is make it clear that there's really no difference between vaping and smoking as far as the body is concerned, or is one worse than the other?
See, you know, vaping has been around, obviously, for a lot less time than cigarettes. So some of that is still an unanswered question. I would say that there are a lot of similarities, a few differences. Of course, some of the long-term effects of vaping are still unknown because no one's been vaping for 30 years, whereas there's people who have been smoking for 30, 40, 50 years. But certainly they both can be extremely harmful, especially when started at a young age.
Doctor, I got to say this, and I went through it personally with my dad, who went and served in World War II at the age of 16, got hooked on cigarettes, died of COPD and emphysema, and he spent the last week of his life throwing up blood. And the only reason I say that, not trying to gross anybody out, but sometimes smokers say, well, something's got to kill me anyway, and they think it's going to be like a lightning bolt, and it's not. Talk about the effects of smoking on the body long term, please.
I totally agree with you, Tommy. You know, I think everyone knows, yes, lung cancer is a risk, which absolutely is a big risk factor with smoking. But smoking affects all parts of the body as well. So not just an increased risk of lung cancer, but lots of other cancers, mouth and throat cancer, bladder cancer, stomach cancer, cervical cancer. And then it can also affect, of course, heart disease. You know, the number one killer in the United States is heart disease, and that's significantly increased risk with smoking as well as strokes. But as a pulmonologist, you know, I take care of a lot of people with COPD and emphysema, and you're exactly right. It is a rough disease. People end up very thin, very frail, very short of breath, and it can be a really awful way to die. And I think it's important to realize that it's not just, oh, if I smoke, maybe I'll get lung cancer. That is real, and that is a huge issue, but there's so many other ways that it affects the body as well.
And look, I'm not blaming my dad for anything at all, but not only is it hard on the patient, it is extremely hard on the family to watch you suffer like that. So if you care about your family, I suggest you quit. Doc, when it comes to nicotine and the effect on the body, this is, without doubt, an addictive drug, and these are, be it legal or not, drug dealers that are trying to get their clients hooked. Is that a misstatement or an exaggeration?
I think that that's a fair comparison. There's no benefit to it, but it makes a lot of money for people who sell it. So nicotine is extremely addictive. It very quickly is absorbed into the body. It reaches the brain within seconds of taking it, and it plays into that same reward pathway that other addictive substances like cocaine, like heroin, play into. And so targeting teens and young adults and children with these, which we all know that these companies do target, is absolutely just a way of getting teens addicted early and then continuing them as consumers who are going to provide money for years and years. And teens are looking for that reward pathway in different ways. So this is just targeting it from a way that's legalish.
So if somebody is listening right now, they're a young adult, teen, whatever, maybe 35, 40, talk, if you will, about the importance of quitting whenever it is that you quit and what your body's likely to look like or react to or be. And look, there are anomalies. There are people that smoke cigarettes every day and live to be 100. There are people that, you know, get hit by lightning and survive. But that's not the mainstream. So I guess what I'm asking you, Doc, is, just explain to people what they're looking forward to not looking forward to, but what their body's likely to be like years from now if they continue to smoke or vape.
Yes, I think mentioning family support is so important, and I think it's important for parents of teens to know that you might not know if your children are doing this. It is very easy to conceal vaping. Of course, the most important thing is to prevent. So I think education is so important to prevent starting in the first place. But if people are already smoking or vaping and their families are looking for ways to support them, of course, number one is not to be judgmental. This isn't a character flaw. This is extremely addictive. It's extremely hard to quit. But to your question of how it affects the body, the longer you smoke, the more the effects of it are. And there's a lot of variation in how different people's bodies react to cigarettes. Some people, like you said, can smoke to 100 and be fine. Some people smoke for a few days and a few years and have a lot of effects. So it's hard to know exactly how your body will be affected, but the longer you smoke, the more effects there will be. That's inevitable.
Generally speaking, as a pulmonologist, I guess that's right, correct, right? Pulmonologist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Lung doctor.
Huh?
Lung doctor, if that's easier.
Lung doctor, okay. But I know because I dealt with my dad. But I just want you to talk about the effects that it has on the body and what they can look forward to, and I say that in quotation marks, feeling like in terms of lung function, et cetera, because you deal with it almost like, you know, I hate to break it down like this, like a mechanic with a car, what you're doing to your carburetor, but you can talk about what you're doing to the internal combustion engine that is your body when we come back. Shelby McRae, MD, a lung doctor, specialist in pulmonary and critical care medicine at LSU Health New Orleans. Not trying to scare you, but I know what my dad went through, and I'm trying to keep everybody healthy and happy. 7:50, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:56 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Shelby McRae, MD, a lung doctor. Doctor, I asked you a bunch of questions, but I want you to get some texts here, if I can, real quick. Somebody says, if you started smoking in your teens, you're now 60. Is it too late to try and quit, and will your body benefit from quitting now?
Absolutely. It is not too late. It's never too late. And there are tools that we as physicians can help to quit smoking. And there are absolutely benefits if we're just thinking about the lungs, even from that standpoint. The longer you smoke, the faster you are worsening your lung function. And as soon as you stop smoking, you're not going to get back that lung function that you lost, but you're going to slow that worsening to just a normal rate. Everyone's lungs get a little bit worse as they get older, but that's accelerated and goes faster when you're a smoker. So it's not too late. And there are definitely benefits to quitting now. And the longer you stay quit, then your cancer risk goes down as well.
This is an interesting question. Please ask the doctor why orthopedic surgeons encourage patients to quit smoking before having a surgery.
Great question. So cigarette smoking especially impairs wound healing. So before any surgery, of course, if it's an emergency surgery, we have to do surgery on people, whether they're smoking or not. But if it's a planned surgery or an elective surgery, you're going to have a harder time healing if you are a cigarette smoker. And so for big surgeries like orthopedic surgeries, which are usually pretty big surgeries, if you can quit smoking beforehand, then your healing time from that surgery is going to be lower.
Doctor, you're going to have to come back because we never have enough time for this. But one thing I wanted to talk about, a thing out of Johns Hopkins University, because, you know, I am a very well-read guy, about these Cool Mint nicotine pouches that they're selling now. I guess it's legal. I don't know. Tell me about them. And Zyn is the name of it. Thank you, Tim Zimmer.
You know, I think it's different ways of kind of concealing nicotine. So these pouches are very discreet ways to have it. I think the risk there is, are we marketing nicotine as a way to quit smoking or vaping and to use nicotine as a tool to help people stop the addictive, you know, smoking, vaping, and then wear off of it? Or are we just marketing this as another way to get teens addicted to nicotine early on and then start buying other ways as well?
It's
a slippery slope, I think.
I would love to pick it up here when we come back. Doctor, thank you. Very helpful, very informative. I'm very passionate about this after what I went through with my dad. And if I can prevent somebody else from, and you see it every day in your practice, if I can prevent somebody else from living that life or dying that death, actually, we got to do it. Thank you, doctor.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Dr. Shelby McCray, a lung doctor from LSU Health New Orleans. We come back, we're talking to Mike Dettelier. Saints taking on Sean Payton and the Broncos tonight. Action here on WWL.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.